This podcast is about spoilers and discussion. It's also about spooky stuff. You know, any film that we talk about here, we recommend you see in advance. You've been warned.
All right, you primitive screwheads, listen up.
What an excellent day for an exorcism.
The horror. There is no shortage of monsters to haunt our dreams.
The horror.
You got red on you.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
The horror.
Alive, alive, alive!
Groovy. Hey everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Oh The Horror. I'm your host, Steve Allman.
And I'm your other host, Rob Holmes.
And we're here again to take a look at horror films that we may or may not know too much about. I certainly don't know too much about, so I'm ready to learn, and Rob's here to teach me.
Yep. So this week's movie is Splinter, directed by Toby Wilkins from 2008. I love this film. I ended up seeing it, let's see, I moved to Chicago. I was here for about a year. I remember this was coming on, but it was like a direct TV release, I think, before it ended up going limited to theaters.
Right.
And there was some hype in the horror community about this film because it just had this really cool look to it. People were like, yeah, it's kind of like The Thing, but on a very low-fi scale.
Yeah, we keep seeing these movies from the era of around the mid to late 2000s that are kind of just going for it.
They're going for it more now because with the ratings board and stuff, you know, you had to have movies go out into theaters with certain ratings in order to be profitable and be released.
Yeah.
Once you hit the mid-2000s, I mean, video on demand was a huge thing, so a lot of people were like, screw it, we're going to bypass the boards, we're going to try and still get, you know, an R rating or whatever, but a little less concerned about a major studio desensitize everything or chop it down to a PG-13 rating just for profitability.
Right.
So there was definitely more room for experimentation. You know, you got a lot more indie films that are actually getting funding at this point. And that's kind of what this film is. It's a fucking amazing movie.
Yeah. And I'm impressed to see, like, I ask you this about, like, those mid to late aughts horror films because I feel like a lot more things were trying to be gotten away with in a weird way.
Yeah.
Like people were more susceptible to just low to mid budget horror films that would either go out into on demand or expect low tier releases. And this gave a lot of indie to not so indie directors like some good shots to actually get a big turn at bat because we had had a breakout hit like Saw or something else like The Descent.
Right.
Like where like one of those will just kind of hit pay dirt and like blow up for a bit. And we kind of got a good ushering in of some pretty interesting ideas. And Splinter was a good one and a solid one, I'll have to say.
Yeah. I mean, Splinter to me is definitely a good jumping off point. If Toby Wilkins wanted to come back and say, all right, let's turn this into a series. Let's delve deeper into it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it feels almost like a novella turned into a film.
Sure.
Like a really cool short story that someone's like, man, this is really effective and to the point. Let's do like a pitch perfect adaptation of it. That's short, sweet, to the point, not throwing in too much extraneous backstory and everything. So there's definitely a lot of questions that are still there that are unanswered. But that's where you can have sequels or prequels or anything that you want to do in order to explain it if they were to choose to do so. I don't necessarily think it is needed. You know, it's not a necessary thing to do, but
exactly.
It leaves it open.
And what I like about this is, against most of the movies that were coming out around this time, it wasn't exactly reliant on a gimmick. And when I say gimmick in the sense that, like, Wreck, you had found footage and that kind of blowing up. Saw, you had, like, some sort of, like,
torture porn,
trap stuff.
Yeah.
Something that was either very basic or very similar. This is just, okay, a good premise for a thriller, and it kind of just escalates from there.
It's literally going back to, like, a creature feature.
Exactly.
Because that's what this is, and it's paying homage to a film that never got its due when it came out, and that was John Carpenter's The Thing. When it came out, it wasn't really considered to be a hit. Like, it wasn't commercially successful. And some critics really didn't like it either. So this film is kind of one of those films where I think that in another 10 years or so, people are going to be talking about it a lot more.
I think so.
and it'll have that cult following where it'll get the credit that it deserves.
And now we not to gas it up too much, I don't feel like it was doing anything extraordinary.
No, it wasn't breaking any new ground, but it's one of those films where I've wanted to see this type of situation. Like, what would happen if, you know, this weird creature that could basically, you know, the second one of these splinters gets on you, it infects you, and then while you're alive, can break your body however it wants sees fit. That to me is the horrifying part of this, is that it really doesn't hold back. There's no holds barred with it, because in a lot of these films, if a person were to get something in them, it wouldn't break their body apart right away. It would probably kill them first, and then it would break the body apart and it would be kind of visceral. In this case, watching someone who's still alive struggle against their own muscles as this thing, this parasite, basically just snaps their wrist back or breaks their fingers breaks their spine all the way back in order to assimilate itself into whatever sort of creature it wants to become in order to be the best predator.
Right. And now I've really liked this kind of its design, like the actual design influences that come with like the literal splintering of some people's bodies. Like, that looks very cool and very interesting, and I like a good type of like artistic design to some of these monsters, creatures, and like diseases, totally. You could say. And this kind of like pretty well sums up that it's a tight, short, doesn't overstay its welcome, and it gets in, it gets out. So let's talk about some of the things that we actually like scene by scene. Because I think that some of the nuance actually can probably bring out even more good.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, we're introduced to our main characters, a couple, Polly and Seth. They're out. I think they're just deciding to take like a little vacation or a little time to themselves. And, you know, it's a good short introduction. I mean, you know, you get introduced to them. You're like, oh, okay, they're together. She's definitely like the one who's in charge and the one who gets shit done in the relationship.
Yeah.
And Jill Wagner's fantastic. I mean, she's been in a lot of stuff. And same with Paulo Costanzo. So they made a pretty good pairing in that. And then we're introduced to, Dennis and Lacey.
Yes.
Later on. And they are two criminals on the run. I mean, at least he is. I think she's less so, more of like an accomplice. So seeing them kind of come together and then seeing this splinter thing on the side of the road at the same time, you're like, oh, okay, cool. This is going to be interesting. And we get our first kill right away with that guy getting...
Yeah, gets the ball rolling. I really like it. Gets the ball
rolling. So it really, it starts it up quick. And those are really our only characters in the film. We have, our four main characters, the guy who owns the gas station, and then the sheriff, right? Sheriff or the deputy who comes by?
Yeah.
The sheriff. So we have six characters in this film.
And it doesn't really give us that much time for like a bunch of creative kills. It's got a very well ramp up tension in order to make those kills count.
And it definitely does. And it feels like a good bottle episode, like of a show where you're kind of like, oh, okay, cool. This is just going to be one location where it's all taking place. Very simple and effective. And they definitely make the most use out of this tiny ass gas station.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this thing is so small.
But again, it's effective filmmaking. It's astute directing that brings a film like this together. Because one location films, we've seen them all a bunch of times, but ones that make them good are the ones that know how to use it.
Yeah, I mean, I liked it right away with seeing the gas station guy getting taken out by the splinter parasite. Seeing that the guy is still alive as this thing is like ripping through his entire body.
Yeah, and that was tough to see.
I mean, looking as the girl like kicks open the bathroom door and he's just...
And for the description of it, it's essentially like a black cactus kind of just like...
Yeah, and it grows
very... Sprawling out of you.
It grows very quickly. So when you see... Because the... Was it the tire that got...
Yeah.
So... They get a flat on the side of the road because they hit this creature or whatever that had gotten the splinter parasite on it.
Yeah.
And we don't really know what the creature is exactly. Like, the one girl thinks it's like one of their pets or some shit like that. Cause she's like cracked out.
It's well hidden near the beginning.
Yeah. But you see as they drive away that this splinter very quickly grows back out. Like, the parasite, it shakes a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you just see it go like a sea urchin, kind of. They look like sea urchin spikes.
Sure, yeah.
And so seeing that on there, I'm like, ooh, this is getting interesting. And then right away, the girl who, I think she's like recovering drug addict or something, or she needs her fix, ends up, I think she trips, falls, hits her head. And that's basically
right, yeah.
what ends up killing her. And then the splinter parasite takes her over afterwards.
Mm. I've liked that because it's yeah. again, it shows like characters' folly.
Yeah.
Along with it. And again, this movie isn't exactly overly lofty in its ambitions. Like, it's more of just a straightforward, like,
oh, it's very straightforward, yeah. but it's fucking effective, man. Because
it goes
straight for like the jugular as far as, hey, we're not holding back on what's happening. When the sheriff shows up and she ends up getting just,
oh yeah, it's
completely
real.
Eviscerated,
mm-hmm.
and then just watching like her transformation as well with that, it's just, oh man,
it's super good,
it's super intense. And then when the main criminal guy, Shea Wingham's character Dennis,
mm-hmm.
ends up getting that shit in his hand. And it fucks up his fingers, and you just see his fingers snapping backwards, and the arm breaks.
God,
and
the fingers really did me in because that looked so.
And then they have
like,
to cut.
Very bad.
They have to cut his arm off, and it's not an easy process.
No, it's not.
Because they're like, oh, we got to go through here, and now we have to get through the bone. And I think, what did they have? Just like they had a.
See, they never take that into account in like most movies, because it's just like a snip, snip. But no, that's a tough part.
Yeah, getting through the bone. And he just had like a pocket knife, right? It was something
right,
small.
Yeah.
It wasn't like a big knife. And then they had to like break it apart.
Yeah, they 127 hours to that.
Oh, fuck, man. That was intense. Watching that moment and then watching the hand pull an Evil Dead 2.
Yeah.
And start running across the floor as it splinters out some more God. Of the parasite stuff. Like,
Again, fantastic. I like props to the makeup department
as
well.
The effects are so good in this
film. They're so good, and I can't, like, they look so expensive. They actually really do.
They really look expensive, but this budget was under, from what I remember, this budget I think is under $100,000.
Mm-hmm. And looking at some of the actual work that's done to some of these bodies and some of these actual like. Effect. It looks insane.
Yeah.
It looks so like intricate and elaborate, and this had to have been hours upon hours upon hours of work.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is, it's kind of like the way that I could explain this film to people, and it sounds terrible to say, but it really isn't. It's kind of like The Thing light.
Sure. Yeah.
Because it's definitely not the.
Because it's not exactly like, it's not puppetry. It's
no,
not.
And it's not as intense or crazy as the thing is.
Mm-hmm.
In the amount of the grand scope of like layers upon layers, this creature is everything. It's like, we know that this creature just is this splinter parasite, and then just takes whatever it merged with and uses it like a puppet.
Yeah.
So there is a difference between what the thing is, mm-hmm. because we don't know if. We know in The Thing that the creature is an alien.
Exactly.
In this, we're not quite sure if it's an alien, mm-hmm. or if it's it's like a man-made parasite, or if it's something that's always existed.
Right, and I say puppetry in the sense that in The Thing, you had like these designed actual like animatronic
right.
things.
There was a lot more physical.
Yes,
based
this is
up.
More based on the physicality of your actors in full makeup,
right.
and like prosthetics.
Yeah.
To like basically act that out, and it's very, very well done.
Yes,
these actors are very good at physically portraying how this thing could potentially move about you, and
I mean, the thing
that, effective.
The
I'll
thing
say.
That, the thing that really gets me about this film, when I keep comparing it to The Thing, but this is where it differs, but in such a visceral way, where I think it kind of, this is what makes the film stand on its own, and we've already talked about it a few times. If you haven't seen this film, and we hope that you have if you're listening to this, but if
oh,
you
yeah.
haven't, still watch it, because it is, if you're in for, if you want to see something that's going to make you feel really squeamish, or if you're like, man, nothing ever messes with me, this is the type of film, just with the snapping noises alone.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Of
ooh,
how,
sound design, man.
Through the, oh man, the sound design's amazing. It really does drive home the special effects in this.
It does.
The idea of, yeah, not something assimilating you, but something reconfiguring your body while you're still alive
is the
really fucked up part to me.
And as far as its plot is concerned, there's beauty in its simplicity.
Oh, yes.
Only because it does its thing so well that a simple story is kind of all you really need.
Yeah.
Could it have been better? Sure. Of course.
It could have been better. I think, like, given the budget, given the lofty goals that Toby Wilkins had for this, he succeeded beyond what I would have as my wildest expectations for such a low budget and lofty goals.
Right. And you've made this argument before that, like, a lower budget makes a director hungry.
It does, because they
for results.
Well, they have to get creative with it. They have to do stuff that normally they would say, oh, okay, let's just do... A lot of the time it's like, yeah, we want to capture everything in the image and on camera at one time. And it's like, well, I don't want, like, these grand spectacle shots always for a film. Sometimes intimacy is better going with these tighter shots, not fully showing your creature in one thing, like giving glimpses and you know, little hints of it here and there, and then you can do, like, more of a reveal on it, which I think is what was really effective in Splinters. Like, you're seeing pieces of the Splinter creatures here and there. You do see them in their entirety, but they're not just being fully thrown at you, how you see in a lot of films nowadays,
right. Yeah,
where they're
look
what we made, putting it on display front and center with with all of the issues being seen as well. Like, all the problems with it usually as well, too. Which most of the time, it's because they CG a creature and you're like, nope, this doesn't look right. Like, something about like, the framing and, like, the foreground, background elements. Like, I can tell that this is super fake.
And,
like,
based on the time that it came out, and most likely because of the budget, they probably didn't even have the time or the money to afford a CG type of reveal.
I mean, there's definitely some CG in this, and sure. I know Toby Wilkins does effects and stuff like that as well. So having somebody who has a background with effects also working as a director can be a really good thing, because they know how it should look and they understand like light and how that has a huge effect on the realism of something.
Right, and it tempers expectations he sets expectations to a reasonable degree.
Yeah.
So that he knows what space he can play in.
Right.
So it's just like, okay, if we can't exactly do CG because it's not going to look this way because we need it to look this way.
Right.
And sort of like, all right, well, if we can play around with how this looks or what this can do, that changes how we can even execute a scene or how we can reveal something. It's a lot of interesting creative decisions that go with money in a weird way.
And this is what blows my mind, is that this is a low budget film, right? It's a very well made, good looking movie that's extremely effective, and it's short. It's not a super long film. It's an hour and 22 minutes. That's with credits. So other than that, it's still shorter.
Mm-hmm.
Something that this got me thinking about as we're talking is, like, we watch Sci-Fi Channel original movies, right?
Yeah.
They have, like, $1 million budgets. That's more than this film had. Yet they look like garbage because they're trying to do too much. Like, how many of these shark films are they going to do? There's, like, 50 different types of shark or underwater creature films. None of them really look good. It's shitty CG that's just kind of, like, slapped together in post-production.
Sure.
Where they basically are, like, it almost seems like they just get two quote-unquote actors out there and are, like, we're filming against some shit out here. Okay, we see water, and this is where the shark's going to come and bite your head off. Pretend your head got bit off, and we're moving on to the next scene. It's like, why not take the money, and instead of investing in garbage, invest in films like Splinter, where it's going to cost you less, and then you might actually get awards and critical acclaim out of it, because you've created something that's genuinely good.
I mean, I won't go against the business decisions of sci-fi when they've had hits such as Sharknado's 1 through 5.
And that's fine, but there's so many other movies that they make that aren't good. And it's the same with companies like The Asylum, which makes Sharknado and works pretty close with sci-fi. I would love to see The Asylum try and make legitimate low-budget horror films instead of just parodies of other stuff, or trying to just, you know, be like, oh, Snakes on a Plane came out? Well, we're going to make Snakes on a Train to come out the same day on DVD.
Just to confuse people.
Yeah. It's like, cool. You can only do that so many times. Come out with something good. You know, it's not that hard. Like,
And you have the... But, like, I've again, that's a weird sort of, like, maybe they wouldn't want to go against like their brand, because that's their brand of like just making absolute schlocky shit.
You can have different divisions of a brand. There can be an evolution of a brand. I mean, there are certain film companies that went from making garbage to, well, still kind of making garbage, but there are some hits in there.
Yeah, there's some ambition.
Legitimately good stuff. Yeah. So there's always room for growth, and in this market, you kind of have to evolve.
Exactly.
But it just seems like that's not happening as much as it should. And the stuff that some of the stuff that's getting acclaim is not as good as some of the stuff that is just kind of being, you know, overlooked. And I feel like Splinter is one of those overlooked films.
Yeah. Well, speaking of being overlooked, why don't we talk about some like fun facts about this movie that we can come up with?
You know,
not that we come up with, but that true.
There's not a ton of facts that I've found about this movie. It is one of these kind of like hidden gem films.
I find odd, because it seems like this could have easily gotten, like there could have been some push behind this one.
I think if it had come out later, not in 2008, I don't know what it was about that time, but I think if it had come out probably 2011, 2012, there would have been a lot more traction behind it.
Sure.
Plus, I think also the idea of releasing DirecTV and then going with video on demand, it's the same problem they're running into with Leatherface, the new one for New Texas Chainsaw.
Which apparently might be good.
I've heard mixed things.
Right.
For that one, there are some reviews that are like, this is atrocious. There's some that are like, no, this is pretty solid. I still need to see it.
Mm-hmm, sure.
But it was the same thing. It came out to DirecTV first. And then it's going to be doing a limited theatrical run and video on demand.
Sure.
That does not help these films. You think it would, because Texas Chainsaw, the last few, have all had theatrical releases, and they make enough money on theatrical release to justify another sequel. In this case, unless distribution rights actually paid for everything, really, and then some, they're probably going to lose money with this, because there's no marketing or hype behind the new Leatherface. I've seen the Red Band trailer, and that's it. That's the only marketing I've seen.
And again, I think that like we are in a less internet-driven, they were in a less internet-driven era than in 2008, only slightly so, because I feel like an on-demand released in 2008 might have gotten a little bit farther than nowadays.
Nowadays would go further. On demand nowadays will do better than
Than
on demand in 2008. So an on demand in 2008, because like Roku and you know
all these other Apple streaming TV services,
stuff,
yeah.
But like Roku was the first really to start doing that more than anything. Like Rokus were starting to come out; they were pretty popular, and then we had other stuff like that as well, but I think Roku came out probably after this film. I think it was closer to like 2009 or something.
Okay,
maybe not. Mm-hmm. Either way, we were limited with the amount of VOD platforms we had. Amazon Instant Video, I don't think, was a huge thing then, or even really existed,
because
Prime Video wasn't a thing at that time.
Because used to be, you would just have to order through your TV menus or call in to order a movie.
But nowadays, the distribution deals are completely different than they were in 2008. So a film like Leatherface would probably be more successful all in all than a film like Splinter was at the time. Release Splinter nowadays in the exact same market, like how they're doing with Cult of Chucky.
Sure.
Basically being like, video on demand. I think they're putting on Netflix already, too.
Really? I mean, then it'll do well, probably.
Yeah, so like, there's going to be that viewership, and there's going to be people coming in and watching it that way. You don't necessarily need to go to theaters. You don't necessarily need to all of a sudden be like, yeah, we're just, you know, straight to DVD. It's like, you have all these other platforms as well, but now they're more viable than they were almost 10 years ago.
Okay.
Because we are talking about almost a 10-year...
Yeah, pretty much a 10-year gap.
When that film came out. And the only reason I knew about Splinter was because I go on a lot of horror websites. So
okay.
At the time, I was on Bloody Disgusting a lot, and that's where I started... You know, there was a lot of hype for this film.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw a bunch of images for it. I saw what the creature looked like. They're like, oh, here's an image of what it is. And I'm like, this looks fucking cool.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see it. So I'm counting down the days trying to find when this movie is coming out. And I remember trying to find it in theaters, and they're like, it's not coming to theaters, or it is, but on such a limited run.
Right, and it's not going to be playing anywhere near you.
Yeah, it
and,
came to like a handful of theaters. And then lo and behold, one day they're like, it's on DirecTV. And at the time I had that for the place I was living at, or it had one of those channels or something sure. for it. And I'm like, boom.
So, well, we're doing it. Yeah.
And I was able to watch it, and like, that was cool as shit. I think I had like a DVR thing and saved it that way and got to watch it and kept cool. it for as long as I could. But I'm like, you know, I'm a passionate horror fan who wants to find this film. It wasn't going to jump out at me then, but nowadays with how much Facebook marketing and everything, it would be a more successful film had it been released today. Really, that's what it comes down to.
And I hope that we get to see again this trend of a bit more of these lower budget horror films getting a better life cycle, because again, this could set that new trend of like, okay, what if something catches on and then catches fire? Yeah. And we get to find out these new gems a lot easier now.
Well, I mean, Blumhouse is doing that with like $5 million films and under, and, mm-hmm. and they were up to, I think, like $12 million budget or something like that. But in that's what's really cool to see, is that they're getting more of a theatrical release, and they're actually, for the most part, very, very successful.
Yeah.
So we're starting to see horror really make a comeback in theaters, and... Yeah, now with, you know, as much video on demand stuff and these new deals where like Netflix will get first run stuff,
right.
and like Hulu will get first run stuff, same with Amazon, like we're going to start seeing more distributors and more production companies pushing for horror, but like quality horror, because we've had so much shit for so long that was like straight to DVD.
Exactly.
And you know, sure, they can... Netflix can buy, you know, oh, we just bought like 40 horror films to, or for this, you know, 3 month run.
Sure, yeah.
But if they're all garbage, people aren't going to watch them. And then, yeah, you know, they just wasted a ton of money. So mm-hmm. it's easier for them to be like, you know what, let's invest in a couple of horror films that cost under $1 million each. And with the amount of people who watch them, if there's hype behind it, we make our money back and then some.
Right.
That's the way to go, I think. For
okay. Yeah. Well, good thing we got the business side down.
I mean, that's this is all my opinion. I could be completely... Oh, no, I mean, I honestly could be completely...
We by no means work in the movie making business. But getting back to Splinter, I think we could wrap up. Highly recommend Splinter. If you're into effects, and I don't mean like so much gore, I don't so much mean like...
I think it's all effects. It's a combination of it's a good meld of practical, digital, sound.
Sound for sure.
Really, really good camera work. It all comes together to be this very effective hour and 20 minute. You know, it's like, wow, I'm glad I saw that. Like,
yeah.
Will it blow your mind completely?
Yeah,
probably not. I mean, sure, okay, but
I think one or two things are definitely worth your time.
Yeah, I find it to be a memorable little horror film that is just it's a fun time.
Absolutely. Yeah. I could not agree more. It's a bit of a blast for wanting like a nice taut little horror thriller that you come out the other side of thinking like, yeah, that was solid. That was good.
I would like to see it come back kind of as in I would like to see a sequel personally. I think there's a lot to delve in with it.
Sure.
As long as it's treated with the same respect as the first one.
I could also see this going the way of like Wreck.
Oh yeah, man.
Where it could turn it on its head and be something crazy.
For its sequel, and then they keep going, and then it turns into a shitstorm. Yeah.
So yeah, if it's a great sequel, then it'll get bad. If it's a bad sequel, like let's not bother.
And then we just pretend it never existed, kind of like The Descent Part 2.
Exactly. So that is going to do it for us this week at Oh the Horror. Thank you guys so much for listening. Be sure to check us out on social media. You'll find that in the description in this episode below. Also check us out on iTunes or wherever you can download podcasts. If you want to write us a review, thank you so much for doing so. It helps us out quite a bit. And yeah, that'll pretty much do it for us.
Yep. I am Rob Holmes.
And I'm Steve Allman. Thanks again.
We'll talk to you next time.
Look at me, Damien. It's all for you.
Come, it is time to keep your appointment with the Wicker Man.
When there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk here.